The Place to Be podcast is a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from legendary promotions across the country, in addition to informative columns and reviews. It is also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. So visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for History of WWE or the Place to Be podcast. Because for anything and everything wrestling, the History of WWE.com is always the place to be.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard?
Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was...
Come on, Rick.
Come on.
We call it
the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game.
Well, you always left me satisfied smiling. So.
That's what she said.
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast. And we are all zoinked up here tonight because we are returning inside the Vintage Vault. I think it's been about 3 weeks since we've last been in there. And I think the guy who's been sleeping in there ever since that time is my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR, my PIC. Welcome, everyone, to episode 95.
Yeah, kind of fitting.
Place to Be podcast.
The year
yeah,
in.
How about that, huh? A lot of symmetry tonight. A few things have happened today for me at work that thinks I should play Powerball tomorrow, but I don't know. Anyway, welcome, everyone. Yeah.
You can buy a reliable computer.
Yeah, no kidding, huh? Ugh. I could buy a... No, never mind. We won't get into that war. Anyway, welcome, everyone, to episode 95 of the Place to Be podcast. And as my PIC has nicely and eloquently said, we are back in the V-squared after a two-week hiatus. Hope everyone enjoyed their Christmas and New Year's. And tonight we don't exactly give you a super stupendous show, but again, it depends on your point of view. And boy, did PTB Nation give us their point of view.
Yes. For probably the worst show we reviewed, we have the most feedback. So
I know. We love you guys a lot. We will get to all of it later on. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, though, I've got a big news bit. This is a huge news bit, and it has nothing to do with the vault. It's actually current events. I don't want to wait until next Wednesday's headline show because it might be old by then, and I kind of want to break it. As everyone knows, the WWE Network will be launching out of the facility I work at in Stamford, Connecticut, right to pretty much up the road from TT Titan Towers. Their master control facility is being built. It's pretty big. The room, there's a lot of seats in it, which means I'm sure when they're live, there'll be quite a bit of muckety mucks in there. Who knows? I might actually finally meet Kevin Dunn. Who the hell knows? But I heard a tidbit, and actually an email went through our company yesterday. I don't know if this is insider or not, but I'm not saying who or where. But obviously, as we've talked about, the network was supposed to launch April 1st, the night of WrestleMania. That is not going to happen. I think a lot of us kind of knew it wasn't going to happen. I think we were all optimistic, and you and I have talked about it endless headline shows over the last 3 months.
It kind of sucks, because it definitely hurts their, I don't want to say continuity, but it just makes sense for it to debut that weekend. You know,
it was like
such a perfect weekend.
The problem
is better than it being half-assed, though.
Right. So we got an email.
You don't need to talk about the process.
Okay, so
I don't want you to give away any more than you need to. So
no, yeah, no, that's true. So in any event, me and the Lithuanian boy there, Matt Rotella, were kind of hinting. I wonder if they'll maybe now. Remember, they've already said that June 17th, which is a Sunday night, they're going to do bragging rights on the network. There's no pay per view in June.
Right.
They're going to do bragging rights Sunday night, June 17th, live on the network. And him and I saw, well, maybe they'll launch that night. Big show, you know, super stupendous. Maybe mm-hmm. Rock will be on. You know, that's kind of a good idea. Then I've heard, through the grapevine, they're not launching until probably September.
Wow.
And the main reason, well, there's two reasons from what I've heard. Number one is hiring people has been a nightmare, believe it or not. You would think, again, this is where I believe, and we won't get into a long, drawn-out thing. We'll talk more about it on Wednesday, but I think this is where their arrogance comes in again. I think they think, oh, everyone's going to jump at the chance to want to work for this network, but I don't know. You know, a lot of people have cushy gigs in the media business. The economy's still not great. Do you want to jump out of a stable gig to do this and then just look at the XFL all over again? Who knows? But the other main reason, and this is actually more of an industry thing, is that they're not giving themselves enough time, apparently, to get clearances from cable networks and satellite companies. And you and I have talked about this. You know, 3 months is, or 4 months is not a lot of time. And I can't think that they obviously have started this process way later than they wanted to. So as much as April serendipitously was a good time to do it, I don't know if they were ready or not.
They should probably push it back till next April, to be honest.
I know, no kidding.
So now I wonder if Classics on Demand gets a stay of execution.
I think it does. Why would you cut it now?
Well, they've already dumped it on a bunch of carriers.
Really?
I still have it on Verizon, and there's still some that do have it. But remember that 1-1 end date that was true for ones that didn't have a contract anymore. So be curious to see if they do end a lot, you know, in still on 331, or if they keep it going until the network launches.
Yeah, I'm a little perplexed myself. But anyway, I wanted to release that info tonight, give you everyone a little special tidbit, because I wanted it to go. I'm gonna be very careful about where I put it, though. I'm not gonna, because I don't want this to come back and bite me in the ass, because everyone there knows I'm a wrestling fan, probably because of the Triple H and Arn Anderson stuff on my desk. But and then, you know, I'll just blame Rotella. He's got cups in his desk. I'll just blame him.
But you're announcing it here on the.
Oh, no, that's right.
I have a feeling we're going to be like Richard Nixon Watergate in about a month, destroying all these any recordings of this podcast.
Burn the tapes, but no. Obviously, they're going to have to say something soon, because unless they stop plugging. Did you notice though? They didn't do a network promo Monday, did they?
Yeah, I thought they did.
Did they? They're going to have to change it or just not run it anymore, because it says April 1st at the end, and they pimped the crap out of it. So
yeah, we'll see.
So it's not going to be a secret very long, but I kind of wanted to bring it up tonight. So
all right, well, yeah, we'll delve into that deeper on Wednesday. Maybe you'll have some more information, and we'll go from there. But it was good. Good to have some breaking news. PTB podcast stepping up.
Stepping up. You start pulling your job. Well, hey, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? I do my best. I try my best. All right.
Well, so you may be wondering, though, when will WWE Network be coming in your house? Just like the pay-per-view we're about to review tonight.
That is true. Look at the master of the segue.
Two of the biggest men in Federation history will raise the roof in your house. World Wrestling Federation champion Big Daddy Cool Diesel defends the title against the number one contender, Psycho Sid.
In your house, Big Daddy Cool is in your face.
Tonight, there will be no mystery guest crashing the party for the smoking guns. Billy and Bart plan to remove the mat from under the feet of the WWF Tag Team Champions, Yokozuna and Owen Hart.
Smoking guns are ready.
My God!
Tonight, Razor Ramon has left a special wake-up call for Double J, Jeff Jarrett, and the Roadie. In a special handicap match, the bad guy will take on both.
Say hello to your worst nightmare.
We are great.
Tonight, in an encounter that will rock the house, the creation of devastation, Adam Bomb, battles the mammoth Mabel in a King of the Ring qualifying match.
Deal with the Bomb Squad.
Everybody is ready.
And finally, tonight, the Hitman Bret Hart has sent eviction notices to two unwelcome guests. The Hitman will battle not only the modern-day kamikaze Hakushi, but tonight, in a separate match, he plans to slam the door shut on Jerry the King Lawler as well.
Jerry Lawler, you will be going straight to the outhouse.
Also tonight, one lucky winner will become the proud homeowner of this luxurious country club dwelling in Orlando, Florida. Maybe that lucky someone is you. So sit back and enjoy the family hospitality the World Wrestling Federation delivers in your house.
House, yeah! In the house,
yeah! Flying to Syracuse, New York!
in your house. Yeah. Yeah. I miss that theme. So,
with a little logo knocks on the door.
Yeah, and they always have like the different, as we'll see as we go through the different ones, based on the season and the location, they would mix it up and do like different little variances of the theme, and the little guy knocking would have a little Santa hat on, other things.
Little jack-o'-lantern or something. Yes. Yeah. As, of course, you just heard, tonight on the Vintage Vault, here on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you In Your House, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Creative title, huh?
Very.
Get used to that for the next... well, apparently, I'm checking Wikipedia. I don't think they ever actually had... Well, you know what? They did... some of these did have subtitles.
Right. Not at the time, though. I think a lot of them, the subtitles came out later when they were on VHS or put out there. But at the time, the first six did not have one. I know that for sure.
Right. According to Wikipedia, it just says premiere. But I mean, that's dumb. That's probably just them labeling it. Obviously, we would not have a title of the secondaries for a while.
Right.
So let's get down to it. May 14th, 19... 95.
Mother's
Live.
Day.
Huh?
It was Mother's Day.
It was Mother's Day.
I remember. Because I ordered it as a Mother's Day gift.
Aren't you sweet? Live from the On Center, which is short for the Onondaga War Memorial in Syracuse, New York. And for those that may be confused, this was not the weekend that Shawn Michaels had his bad luck.
No. That was later.
Bar. That would be later on. I think like in August, I think.
What, with the Marines and stuff? No, yeah. October, right before New Year's 4.
Okay. So it's not for a while. So it didn't happen here.
And now this is obviously Vince's answer to WCW at the time, who had started doing monthly pay-per-views, I think in like late 94, early 95, so.
Might even have been earlier than that. It seemed like maybe...
They had a lot, but I don't think they were monthly until early 95 when they added Uncensored. And actually, I don't think there was even a January one in 95 for WCW. I think it was February where they decided. So it was probably around the same time. They probably got word and they ended up deciding to do it as well. Yeah. So, but I like the WWF's take on it. I like how they were doing just the 2 hour shorter shows, less money, just $20. I thought that was a good plan to counteract the full shows WCW was doing. They only ran from 7 to 9 and then the replay. There was actually a couple times I got the replay. I had stuff going on and, you know, right away, obviously the internet was burgeoning and I didn't really have anything at this point. So. Nothing was really spoiled, so you could watch a replay at 9 to 11. You're still not up that late, school night.
Exactly. No, absolutely. And I have the actual Coliseum video. And speaking of Coliseum video, we start getting into dread time, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But let's continue on with the particulars. Your announcers are, well, we actually have a debut right off the bat. Of course, you heard your play-by-play guy, the ubiquitous Vincent Kennedy McMahon, but his color commentator, because, as you heard in the intro, Jerry the King Lawler is actually on the show.
And not he's very accused of rape or anything else for once.
No, yeah, and he's not in court with marrying 15-year-old cousins. He actually was involved in the show. So he brings in a relative, not a newcomer, though, but someone who has not been with the company in almost 12 years. Would you like to... announce who our debuting color commentator is.
And of course, that voice can only belong to one man in the world of wrestling, and that is Michael P.S. Purely Sexy Hayes.
That's right.
But he's got a new moniker here in the WWF, Doc Hendricks. Mm-hmm. Of course, his real name. Yep.
Which I was about to say. Oh, no, good. Real name is?
Michael Seitz.
Yes. And did you know who he was?
You
knew who he was already, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you agree with me that Vince changing his name was absolutely stupid?
Yes and no. I think they wanted to make him a legitimate announcer. It wasn't. And like, you know, they're bringing him into wrestler or anything. So I was kind of okay with it. At the time, the style of announcer was still very, not serious, but I think he needed a more legitimate look because they wanted him to be more of like an interviewer and news guy than just like a goofy color guy. So I was kind of okay with it.
Okay.
I didn't mind the new look and everything.
I remember my brother laughing that they gave him a weird name because my brother was obviously a big Freebird. Obviously, Michael Hayes, a member of the Freebirds way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
part of the infamous threesome that dominated the heel side of both World Class and the AWA. Mm-hmm. The turning point for them as heels occurred at Star Wars, Christmas Day 1982, which was, you know, World Class's big show during the year, Christmas night at Reunion Arena in Dallas. Ric Flair was defending the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Kerry Von Erich. And Michael Hayes, who was a face at the time, was the ref. Well, something happened. There was some shenanigans. And Terry Gordy, who was another Freebird, slammed the cage door into Kerry Von Erich's face. Ric Flair got the pin, kept the title, and then he and Gordy and Hayes proceeded to get in the ring and beat the living crap out of Kerry Von Erich, and thus one of the greatest rivalries of the 1980s was born.
And if you hear Michael Hayes talk about it, this is the program of feud that really launched World Class. And it was really ahead of its time because, you know, WWF and Vince McMahon stories that they brought it out of the dingy bingo halls in the mid-80s. But the World Class was way ahead of their the time. They had the music, they had the videos, they had the great TV deals, they were overseas, syndicated. And, you know, they were doing big-time storylines and angles down south way before WWF exploded. So, and, of course, Hayes was a big part of that.
Yes, and, of course, the last Freebird was Buddy Jack Roberts, or just Buddy Roberts. And they, you know, they brawled through World Class. Then they went to the World Wrestling Federation for a very brief time in 1984, mid to late 1984. They weren't there very long, maybe 6 months, maybe.
Yeah.
Then they moved on to the AWA and actually were babyfaces in a feud with the Road Warriors. Mm. And that they were one of the first face painters, not one of the first, but they had a great feud. There's a memorable match on one of the DVDs, probably the Road Warriors one, where they were wrestling at Comiskey Park. I think it was that infamous AWA outside show where there was like 15 titles.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the Crockett guys were taking all the AWA guys to contracts, and Vernon didn't even realize it. It was such a disaster. And it was cool. What? It has nothing to do with you, even though you were doing the same thing to the AWA. But and that same match, while of course Road Warriors had their faces painted, the Freebirds had the Rebel flag painted on their face, which was pretty cool. And then they kind of putzed around. They went to WCW. They kind of broke off for a little bit. Hayes became a solo guy in the early 90s. He actually won the U.S. title from Lex Luger. Yes, I know, Art. That makes me laugh, too, that Lex Luger actually could wrestle with Michael Hayes. And again, and then here he is.
Had the bastardized Freebirds with Jimmy Garvin.
Yes.
They were kind of the goofier, more flamboyant, effeminate version of the Freebirds.
It really was. As I'm watching some of these some of the WCW shows that some of the guys on YouTube have, it was almost like the early 90s version of the West Hollywood Blondes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very uncomfortable at times.
So then he did some managing, he did some announcing there until he left and returned to Stanford, and he's been there ever since. So he will be under the Doc Hendricks moniker over the next 4 years or so before reverting back to Michael Hayes and mainly working in the office. But he adds a little fresh blood to the commentary table. He would do like Action Zone and stuff like that, and he'd pop up here and there again on pay-per-view.
Yep.
I didn't mind him here. I know a lot of people don't really care for him, but I liked the change. It kind of went with this whole new era. We get the monthly pay-per-views, you know, a whole different flavor to the Federation now, another new announcer. And just speaking of announcers, I wanted to quickly mention Todd Pettengill, because listening to him at the beginning of that little promo we played, I think he's underrated as like a pitch man. He was perfect for what they needed, and guys like that are sorely lacking today. Like, he always had such great energy. Never fucked up, never did anything stupid or botched anything. He always, he was a little over the top sometimes, but he was great at really selling the product and picking up from Eugene after he left.
I agree, and I think a lot of that comes from his radio background.
Obviously,
morning shows. Obviously, for those that don't know, Todd was on the morning show with Scott Chan, Scott and Todd on 95.5 PLJ in New York. So, obviously, if you know radio morning shows, you know, you got to pitch sponsors and read live reads in the middle of the show. So he knew how to do it well. He delivered perfectly. So he's also on the show. And there's also another, we'll get to her later, but there's actually another debuting on-air talent that kind of goes in and out with the wind. But we'll get to her in a little bit. All right. By the way, the attendance, only 7,000.
Small arena.
The War Memorial is not a big place. But what upsets me now is right up the road from where I am here in Norwalk is the arena at Harbor Yard. And it makes me mad because if this was like 17 years ago, right now, the way that the place sounds when the place is full, like when I've been there for Raws and stuff, that'd be a great place for a small pay-per-view, I think. You've been there, obviously, for shows as well, you and I together. Yep. And I think it'd be a cool place for, like, a nice mid-level pay-per-view. I mean, for Christ's sakes, they get – the place seats about 9,500. And they fill that up at shows now, and they black out seats. They don't have to black out seats there. They can get a full sellout. So I don't understand why they don't go after some smaller venues again and, you know, for pay-per-view when they only get 9,000 to 11,000 anyway. But, you know, it bums me out because we didn't – you know, New Haven never got pay-per-views back then, and I don't know, it's kind of a bummer, but what are you going to do? Now, and the buy rate was 0.83, which I know we don't talk
about. I don't do any tricks.
Well, you know, up in that neck of the woods, I don't know, it might be a little, not really your kind of weather there, Dennis. I don't know, you might have to wear a parka or something, although it is May, so maybe it's not that warm, but or cold. On this show, we've got two dark matches, but not only do we have dark matches, but we now
have a winner.
Well, you're an exclusive art in our eyes, and a very special one. But starting with this show and moving on through, Jesus, early 96 probably. I don't even think they go that far. We have the dreaded, and this is dreaded because this is almost worse than a dark match. Coliseum Video Exclusives. You hear us on our Wednesday headline shows make fun of people like Tyson Kidd and Jinder Mahal and Trent Barretta and those guys. Pretty much.
Is that
those
the guys official Coliseum exclusive?
that's the exclusives bump. What Coliseum Video exclusives were is they were dark matches, but they never aired on TV and you only got them. They were like motivations for you to buy the tape.
Well, and mainly for the live crowd, because obviously being a 2-hour pay per view. Most live shows are always 3 hours, regardless of what it was. So
right.
At the time, what they're trying to do is make it worthwhile for you to come out to the arena. So you get the five or six matches on pay-per-view, and then they loaded the dark matches with guys who hadn't competed on the show. So you get to see all the guys. So it was a bonus for the live crowd, and then they tape them and throw them on the Coliseum videos as well. So it's a good idea, but the problem is as the year goes on, we'll see a lot of guys that should have probably been on the pay-per-views were in these dark matches.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of them are in them tonight.
Yes.
These two matches are dark matches. These were ones that actually were on the show and they're not on the tape. Jean-Pierre Lafitte, one of your boys, mm-hmm. one half of
are
the
we talking
former
about
Quebecers.
Him now, or we'll wait till he debuts on camera, I guess.
Yeah. We'll wait. He has kind of a new thing, mm-hmm. but we'll get to that down the line when he actually makes pay per view his actual return. But he is the former Quebecer. He's doing something else now, but we'll explain that later. He defeats your other boy. This is like a U match right here. Sparky Plug, Bob Holly. He was still Sparky Plug, right? Yeah, he was still Sparky Plug.
Yeah, he was Bob Spark Plug Holly at this point.
Okay. This match actually was a dark match, but then it aired on Raw, like 3 weeks later or something? Let me check what our man Graham Cawthon has in the history of WWE.com.
It
aired
June
5th.
Yeah, June 5th, okay.
June 5th. The British Bulldog and Owen Hart, one half of the World Tag Team Champions, wrestled to a 15-minute draw. And why don't you tell everyone what was so special about this match?
That match would actually be used as a King of the Ring qualifying match on that episode of Raw. So
yes. And now the Coliseum Video exclusives. Again, as my PIC mentioned, these were for the crowd and not on – they were for the live crowd, never seen on actual TV, but they would be on the back mm-hmm. end of the tape if you bought it. And you look at these four guys and you're like, really? Even here, you're thinking to yourself, really?
Well, this card, though, was fairly full. And the matches all kind of had some meaning. So I'm kind of all right with the show. It gets worse as we go throughout the year.
Okay.
Although, I guess, you know, if you have those three matches and make this a 3-hour show, it'd probably be much better. But
yeah. The two undercard matches were The Undertaker. You're thinking he wasn't on camera. Not this month. Took on Kama. Like Supreme Fighting Machine and part of the corporation. He defeated him. And that was, of course, that feud that was continued on all the way back to the Rumble with Taker and the Urn and the corporation. More on that as the year progresses. And the other match, and this I'm sure this kind of upset you that your boy was not on the live show, but Bam Bam Bigelow, coming off his WrestleMania 11 loss to LT, defeated Tatanka.
Well, now that is a pretty big revelation, but we'll get to that also. At our next show, Bam Bam Bigelow switching sides, turning face.
Yeah.
A lot going on with him. So that's a match you definitely thought would be on the show. But
yeah, I concur. Okay, ready? Let's get down to business. We are ready. Our opener is awesome. One of the better openers. One of the better openers probably in the history of pay-per-view. Obviously, yeah. We talked about the greatest opener ever at WrestleMania 10.
It's in that next tier.
Yeah, this is good. It was mentioned in the open. We have the Hitman, Bret Hart.
Doing double duty.
As usual. And trust me, get used to it because you'll see a lot this year. Bret the Hitman Hart taking on this newcomer. And this was a guy that I was always excited about and just, once again.
About 3 years too early.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Or wrong promotion.
Well, yeah, that's
if he was
true.
In WCW at this point, he probably would have been much better used since they were using their lightweights and cruiserweights. Maybe not at this point, but maybe like 7 months from now if he was there. He probably would have been used a little bit better.
Right. His name? Hakushi. Why don't you give us his background?
Jinsei Shinzaki started in Michinoku Pro Wrestling in 1993, known for doing the praying walk, which is very similar to Undertaker's top rope walk, but he would do that like with his hands in a prayer position and head bent. Vignette aired on December 10th, 1994, Superstars that he'd be debuting soon. But his actual first match was at a house show in Poughkeepsie, New York, November 29th. Made his TV debut on December 18th, Wrestling Challenge, defeating Gary Scott. He was managed by Shinja, who was actually former Orient Express member Sato. And he had white face paint Shinja in a white suit. Basically all white, decked out. Looked pretty nice. On the March 25th episode of Superstars, Bret Hart was receiving an award from the Japanese media for being the most popular American wrestler in Japan, something like that. And Hakushi came out, took umbrage to that, didn't enjoy Bret Hart receiving that award. So he attacked him and hit a beautiful, picture-perfect acai moonsault on Bret off the interview podium down to the floor. So that was pretty cool. And that kind of jump-started this feud here.
And who was his manager again?
Shinja.
Otherwise known as Sato!
Sato! Sato and Kato!
Yes. Who, by the way, Sato, 4 years earlier, I was watching disc two of the Bret versus Shawn Rivalries DVD last week, and one of the matches on it is the Rockers versus the Hart Foundation from a show in Japan, and he was one of the seven announcers that were doing that was doing the match. It was crazy. It was like six guys all speaking Japanese at a million miles an hour. It was really funny. He was one of them. Which I think it's the same show that was that infamously like that cult match between the Road Warriors against Hogan and
Tenryu.
Was it Tenryu? Yeah, Tenryu. I did it. I knew it. How about that, Joey, huh? Yes, and which Hogan actually started wrestled like he did in the early 80s in Japan, which was actually very good.
One of the sound bites I got to get is, I got to try and find a Sato one. Might be tough. I'll try, though.
Yeah. So, and really on paper, when you think about this opener, you're thinking, wow.
Mm.
This is the kind of guy Bret needed to face. And sure enough, the match delivered. It was really good, well-paced.
When's the last time we saw a guy like this? I mean, 1-2-3 Kid was doing a decent majority of what Hakushi does. But before that, had to be, what, like Dynamite?
Probably.
Back in the mid-80s, late 80s?
Yeah.
We haven't really seen anyone in the promotion that doing this. I mean, the Rockers were up there, but not like this.
Jumping Bomb Angels?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
You know? Yeah.
So, you know, it was nice to see 1-2-3 Kid gain someone. I guess Owen Hart was doing variations of it as well. But,
right.
Yeah. Since he had turned heel, he had slowed down with that stuff. But as we'll see, he can pick it up as well. But Kid and Bret were two of the guys that really were going to benefit from Hakushi joining the promotion.
Yes. And speaking of Kid and Bret, I don't know if I think we mentioned it when it happened, right? Mm. But when we were doing our vaults from mid-04, mid-94, Kid and Bret ended up having a sensational Raw match for the world title.
Mm-hmm.
One of the better Raw matches of all time. I believe it is definitely on the best of the Raw 15 three-disc set.
Yes.
And I think it's the only thing it's on. I don't think it's on Bret. Is it on – it might be on Bret's, actually. I'm not sure.
I know it's definitely on the Raw one.
It's definitely on the Raw one. So Bret was – it was great for him to get a chance to wrestle some of these unknown guys with incredible
work. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
You know what, Bret? You can make El Dandy as good as Hakushi. Maybe not at that time, but no, maybe. But the match is excellent. Great start. I don't think Lawler was – were they actually in cahoots at this point?
Lawler and Hakushi? No, not really. They would kind of hook up later as the months rolled out. But here, they're separate.
Okay, they're separate. I did like Sato with his all-white outfit. It was pretty cool.
And Hakushi's outfit was cool, though. The white pants, and he had the little spray paint tattoos all over his face and body.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. Very, very, I don't want to say controversial, but kind of radical for mid-90s WWF particularly. I think in WCW, I don't think they would have gotten blown away by that. Because they've seen, remember, we're talking about the promotion they used to have, Kabuki and Muda and all the Chono and those kind of guys. So they, though the Southern crowd wouldn't have been surprised, but definitely the New England, you know, Northern WWF crowd, not used to a guy with all this weird stuff on him and a tremendous wrestler. And it is a shame because Vince, I think, was still very stubborn with the product at the time. And he definitely, in my opinion, was kind of out of his element. And that's unfortunate. Within a few months, you know, but we'll
get... Especially during a year like this where, you know, they had a lot of people on the roster, but not a very deep talent-wise. So he's someone that could have risen probably to, like, IC level. But that title was kind of tied up all summer. And that title was actually... This is one of the few years... It's funny because 95, you think, oh, big talent dearth and not the best product. But this is probably one of the few years the IC title was really up there with... Or probably superior to the world title based on the feuds. So...
Yeah, no kidding.
It was tough for those lower mid-card guys to really break through because it was almost, you know, being monopolized by guys that could be considered main eventers as well.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And he got kind of lost in the shuffle. But this was a nice little tight match, 14 minutes, which for a two-hour show,
it's a lot of time. Yeah, a lot of time.
Yeah, and as we'll see later on in the show, it almost seemed like they kind of this is where I just thought of this while we were doing our pre-production stuff or while my PC wasn't giving me the middle finger that this match in terms of setup almost reminds me of WrestleMania 27 in the formatics department. Like they, as the show went on, I think they didn't realize, holy crap, 2 hours isn't a lot of time. And they seem to have, so I don't think they probably shouldn't have given this match as much as it did for formatics purposes because they kind of looked a little harried at the end, But screw it. It was a tremendous match. And if you were going to give a match this much time, if you were going to give a match on the card this much time, this was the one to do it.
A little more backstory, just going off Wikipedia.
Sure.
What actually happened originally was February 20th, Brett received the WWF Magazine Award of the People. And Lawler made mention of it, stating that votes by Japanese people were excluded and Hart was a racist. And Lawler persuaded Hakushi that Hart was a racist. So on the March 25th, Brett received an award from Japanese media. That's when Hakushi attacked him. April 10th, Brett teamed up with 123 Kid and Bob Holly to take on Hakushi, Owen Hart, and Yokozuna. I don't remember that match at all.
Wow, that sounds like a good match.
Yeah, and Holly pinned Owen, so Brett's team picked up the win. And then on the Action Zone on April 23rd, Brett and Razor teamed up to defeat Jeff Jarrett and Hakushi. So
even that seems like a good match.
You know, there's not... There's a lot of hidden gems on Raw and Action Zone and Superstars in 94 and 95. No, I'm not saying off-the-wall five-star matches, but better matches than you'd think when you just look at the pay-per-view lineups and general quality of the shows overall. But there were some pretty good – they had a decent amount of talent. I mean, it wasn't completely – the cupboards weren't, you know, completely bare at this point.
No, I don't think so either. But again, we were still dealing with the personality side of it and the character side of it.
If they had done a better job at the main events – instead of the way they ended up sucking throughout the year, I think this year would be looked at a little bit better. Because the undercard really wasn't bad. It's just a lot of these guys were kind of hanging out down there. And it was like this weird mix of guys that were being phased out, guys being brought in, and like temporary placeholder guys before the real new fresh talent came in 96. But
yeah, exactly. So great opener. Brett wins it actually with a reverse roll-up, kind of a sneak-in.
Yep.
A sneak-in. And actually... I like that finish because if they were going to make Hakushi still be strong, you obviously didn't want him to tap to the sharpshooter. So this was a good pin.
Similar to when he pinned Bigelow, I think, at King of the Ring 93 and how Owen pinned him at WrestleMania. I think it was that kind of...
Like a schoolboy.
No, like a reverse victory roll kind of thing.
Victory roll. That's what I was thinking of, victory roll. So there you go. Good win for Brett, and obviously his night is not over.
Right. Well, a little good piece of psychology business. As he's leaving the ring, Brett twists his ankle. Coming out of the ring,
that's funny,
and he limps off. So, dark cloud now on his health as the match with Lawler looms later in the evening.
Forgot about that. That's right. Forgot about the little tweak. Okay, number two, another kind of little gem. I mean, we gave that. Well, we gave the opener a good. I gave it a 3. You gave it a 3.5. So we definitely like that match a lot.
Yeah,
and it is on a DVD.
Yep.
It is on a DVD. It's on. For those that don't know, obviously you can double check with our Broham, Graham Cawthon, historyofwwe.com. It is on his DVD. Yep, Bret Hart's story, the best stories. Yep, it's a fit. Yeah, so it is on his DVD, not the Heart and Soul, his. Brett's DVD. So, wouldn't think that a match from this show is actually on a compilation.
Well,
somewhere.
That was a great DVD, and Brett picked those matches for that DVD, so it doesn't surprise me.
No, not at all. Okay.
You gave me, whip me like a red-headed stepson.
Yeah. Wonder what he was doing right now. I know he was in
his legs.
Yeah, exactly. With his, with his big poofy hair and his little man pantyhose. All right. Next up, a handicap match, as mentioned in the. I feel like the intro just like booked the whole thing for us, or like set the whole thing up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think they were really trying to just push the show. Maybe they aired the first 5 minutes to everyone, so they would try and get some last minute views. Wouldn't surprise me.
Entirely possible. We have a handicap match. Razor Ramon, the bad guy, still red hot at the top of the card.
Still chasing that title.
Yes, which he was good at. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the common formula for booking is face chases, heel dangles.
Yep.
Razor taking on your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, Double J Jeff Jarrett, your boy, your cousin's boy.
Mm-hmm.
Was that really his favorite wrestler at that time?
By this point, him and I weren't. We had kind of fallen off at this point. So it was mainly throughout '94 that he was a big Jarrett fan.
Oh, okay. Not that I want to bring up – sorry, I don't want to bring up any interior Brett Shawn issues, but maybe someday we'll get into that. But
yeah.
The Lost podcast. But anyway, and his it was a handicap because he's taken on his boy, the Roadie, who we already have talked about. He's interfered matches, but this is his actual first match, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yes, his actual first match.
Right. So, all right, here's the background. Of course, you know, at WrestleMania, Razor was facing Jarrett for the IC title, but Roadie interfered and Jarrett got disqualified, holding onto his belt. On, April 8th, Superstars, Jarrett faced Aldo Montoya. Jarrett accidentally pinned himself during a bridge attempt, or during a slam attempt. Mm-hmm. And Jarrett was initially announced a winner, but then Montoya was declared the winner. And they kind of held up the belt for a couple weeks, and then Jarrett beat him on April 22nd to regain, or to, maintain his title. During the match, Razor Ramon came to ringside and chased the Roadie backstage. Despite this, Jarrett managed to gain the victory and retain his title. It was announced the next day on Challenge that Ramon would be teaming up with the Kid to take on Jarrett and Roadie in your house. But between that announcement and the show, 123 Kid actually suffered a legitimate neck injury. And it was announced he would not be able to participate in this match. So it was actually changed to a handicap match. Now, I thought at the time, for sure, they'd just make it a tag match. I don't know why they didn't just put Aldo in the match. It didn't really make sense to me. It seemed like they were kind of pushing him as a not a legitimate guy, but maybe trying to give him a little bit of a rub.
Right.
So it's kind of weird that they went the handicap route. But I'm okay with it. Razor's a guy who can really build some heat. So,
yes, I agree. So that brings us to this match, which not bad. I mean, Roadie was
I like this match. I thought Razor and Jarrett really had great chemistry together, to be honest with you.
I think they
worked well together throughout this whole feud. Not as good as the Mania match, not as good as the Rumble match, but it's up there. And Road Dogg was solid in the ring at this point, too.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about this both at WrestleMania, I believe at the Rumble. These two guys were on the house show circuit pretty much exclusively throughout this entire year, so they fit each other like a glove. And, Roadie, again, serviceable, so, really a good match. I mean, a little less, obviously, than Brett Hakushi, but not terrible. And I think we're two for two in solid matches.
Another long match, too, 12:37.
Yeah, so they were definitely front-loading this show. I don't know, maybe they didn't have any faith in the main event from the beginning. But, again, three good workers. And they definitely did their best, I think, in terms of booking this show, to put in the best, obviously, the best workers and put on the best matches because – obviously, they wanted people to buy these new off-month shows. So it was well booked in that aspect, at least for the undercard. As we progress, it gets a little shaky, but definitely two solid matches to start. Razor wins.
And that goes back to our point that the mid-card was just very, very solid at this point. They had just a lot of good workers that could put on good matches and unheralded, I think, a little bit, to be honest with you, at this time. But... Razor wins the match, so he finally gets a little bit of heat back. Obviously, doesn't get the title, but he does get his win finally in Jarrett and Roadie. But after the match, Double J and Roadie start beating Razor down, and the attack is on. Aldo Montoya comes out to try and make the save, but he's Aldo Montoya, so that doesn't really help, and he gets the shit kicked out of him as well. And then an unknown man jumps in the ring,
Yes.
So a weird looking dude comes in and aids the man he says is his friend, Razor Ramon, but the cops drag him out because he's just a Spanish guy jumping into the ring and they don't know what the hell's going on. So they drag him to the back, and backstage Ramon explains things to the cops, gets his buddy freed, and reveals that he's Savio Vega, yep. Razor's good buddy from, I guess, down in Miami or Cuba or somewhere. So Savio was actually Juan Rivera, who also formerly portrayed Quang in 1994.
Yes. Yeah, remember, 300 pounds of shit hitting him. Yeah.
You said that song, we're going to hear it a lot throughout 95 and 96.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Becomes one of the most well-known one of the most well-known songs throughout this era.
I know.
He's definitely becomes one of those guys, just a reliable hand, almost like the Tito Santana of this mid-90s.
Yes. Yes.
A guy who's always on pay-per-view, always puts on a pretty solid performance.
Yeah, I was about
really
to say that he's
far.
In that realm of like Tito, Coco, Haku, mm-hmm. that kind of wrestler. Mm-hmm. Guy that is not going to set the world on fire, but he's not going to throw a piece of crap at you either. He's right. going to give you a good, solid in-ring performance. You know, IRS, that kind of guy. And boy, you're going to see enough of him next month, that's for sure. More than you thought you would.
Yes. So Razor has a new ally in his feud with Kid on the Shelf. It was a good way to introduce Savio, I thought.
Mm. I agree, particularly with how much they were going to use him. Mm. And but yeah, he'd be an idiot. He'd be with he'd be a face of in the company for a while, longer than I think anybody thought. All right. Well, we talked about two really good matches to start the show, and now here's where we start to dip a bit, and that's an understatement. Our next match pits one of my favorite guys, actually, in the mid '90s. Maybe it was me or Mark for the big. Big dudes like you and I always talk about, big brawlers. Adam Bomb, babyface. Always liked his tights. Thought they were cool. Taking on
my girls like candy. A candy cane.
Never thought it's been forever since we've heard this song.
I know. I was gonna say, never thought we'd hear this song again. of course, we're talking about everybody's biggest candy girl, and that is Mabel, one-third, I guess, of Men on a Mission.
More like one-half when you factor in body
yeah,
weight.
More like 80% of Men on a Mission. This was kind of a change of pace for Mabel. He wasn't Mr. Happy-Go-Lucky anymore. He may not even fit this song anymore.
I don't care. We're going to play it every time still.
Oh, hell yeah, we're going to play it. But my point is he's not as happy-go-lucky as he was. Why don't you explain why he's not as happy-go-lucky as he was?
All right. On the March 12th Action Zone, I remember this like it was yesterday watching this, Men on a Mission lost a big tag team title match to the Smoking Guns. And after the match, Men on a Mission snapped and brutally beat the champions down, shocking the crowd. On the 326 Challenge, Men on a Mission defeated Ken Raper and Gary Sabaw in a squash match. After the match, MOM apologized for the attack on the Guns and invited them out to shake their hands. The Guns came out, being the nice cowboys that they are. Mm-hmm. However, the Candy Girl and his partner once again attacked the Guns, turned their attention to Oscar, who was like, "What the hell's going on here, boys? Let me freestyle for you, try and get my way out of this. Look, I'm going to put my foot up on this trash can, show you that I'm real." But they didn't buy it. They beat Oscar down. Mabel crushed him with a leg drop. Oscar would never be seen again. And the Men on a Mission were now heels. And I will say this. When this match was announced as a King of the Ring qualifying match, I would have bet anything that Adam Bomb was winning this. I remember we used to still do our monthly picks, and I was positive Adam Bomb was winning this match. I didn't think Mabel was going to ever count to anything as a singles guy. I thought he was just in there. This is before I really realized that they were obviously building him up as a major heel. This isn't something I probably would have thought of at the time. So, but in my eyes, this is a major upset.
Yeah, well, you know what? You weren't the only one. Because, reading the sheet, again, I was coming close to graduating. I wasn't totally watching, but I was still reading the mags and stuff. And I read about that, and then I ended up catching it. I ended up catching the match. I think they aired it on. It was an episode of Superstars sometime down the line. But I did end up watching that heel turn, and I just thought that was kind of weird. But I agreed with you. Then again, me being a big Adam Bomb mark.
Well, the weird thing is it happened before WrestleMania. So they kind of went in through Mania. The Guns had the whole thing where they lost the titles and all that. And, Men on a Mission, the heel turn, it already happened. So it's kind of weird that they were left off completely after WrestleMania after being set up to kind of be the new big heels. But
Yeah, very weird. And you hadn't seen – and then they weren't on – Yeah, very weird. Mm-hmm. So here, it is a King of the Ring qualifying match. Mm-hmm. This is technically the first one. Yes, technically the first one because even though the other match, I don't know if it was happening before or after, mm-hmm. between Owen and Bulldog that we mentioned earlier, but it would not air for 3 weeks on Raw. So technically, this is the first King of the Ring qualifying match.
Yep.
Unfortunately, this is also Adam Bomb's last pay-per-view match.
Oh, what an awful record, too.
Yes. A quite forgettable
Mets-like.
0-6.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. 0-6. 0-2, 0-1. 0-2 at the Rumble, 0-1 at WrestleMania, 0-2 at Survivor Series, and 0-1 here, which is now other pay-per-view.
Ted DiBiase be ripping him like he did at the 94 Rumble. A waste. He's a waste.
That's right.
Of course, we'll see him again someday, though. A long time from now.
Yeah, in about, 6.5 years or something of that nature. Yeah.
He'll make a quick cup of coffee return.
Yes, he will. We were hoping for more, but it wasn't. But we'll get there. And unfortunately, I wish a cup of coffee went slower than this match because thank God it was less than 2 minutes and it was just a real big waste of time, to be honest with you. Mabel wins with a powerbomb, wins the qualifier, and continues on in the extended King of the Ring.
Shockingly, definitely shockingly.
Yeah, but what did you think of this? Forget the fact Adam Bomb lost, but in less than 2 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely shocked at the time. I was sitting there like, what the hell's going on? Because, he just hadn't ever been positioned as anything legitimate. And Adam Bomb with the face turn, not that he was ever used prominently either, but he just seemed like someone that should win this. We'll see when we get to King of the Ring. The whole thing was fucked anyway, so Adam Bomb probably should have been in it. But
yeah, probably.
Obviously, we didn't know what was coming with Mabel at this point. It just seemed like he'd be a throwaway guy in the opening round of King of the Ring. But he does advance on to the tournament here. Under 2 minutes, Adam Bomb falls prey to... we had Powerbomb here, but that can't be right.
Maybe it was. Maybe he did have Powerbomb. I don't know. Let's see what Graham says.
That'd be shocking.
Graham has...
Power slam.
Mabel pinned Adam Bomb with a power slam after kitchen bomb.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, he came off the ropes and he caught him and slammed him. I was going to say, I don't see Mabel doing a power bomb to Adam Bomb.
No, I don't either. And if he did, it probably would have been hideously disgusting. So, all right, so there's the first piece of crap match of the night. Mabel moves on in the extended King of the Ring tournament, which, of course, will take place the following month. And, this is going to be the shortest week ever having to do that one next Friday. But anyway, we're still, of course, doing this one. And this is where we'll take a break because I think we need to...
Hey, BTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
I feel like it's been forever since we've done any of this.
No kidding. This one, this is one, of course, that I'm was glad to not have to listen to for 2 weeks. But
All right, here we are. 4/23/95 main event. Jim Duggan lost in the opening round of the U.S. title tournament to Steve Austin. I think that's where we left off last time.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. So let's see where he headed after that. He fought Big Bubba to a double countout on May 3rd worldwide taping. Then he defeated Butch Long for the 6-3 worldwide at that taping as well. Then we head to Charlotte, North Carolina, intersection of Trade and Tyron Streets. This is a live outdoor Saturday night they had. And Paul Orndorff defeated Jim Duggan in the semifinals of the Slim Jim Challenge. So he seems to have hit a little rough spot here.
Yeah.
On June 6th in Dalton, Georgia, he defeated John Faulkner, then defeated an unknown the next day. And then, we'll save this next one for then. So a light month here for Duggan in May.
Yeah, he obviously went from attempting to bury DDP and then attempting to bury Steve Austin to getting buried himself.
Hey, he beat Butch Long. It's a big win.
And big man Johnny Faulkner. And of course, he surprised me as we are obviously we do written pay-per-view reviews on our awesome message board. Please join it, bigelow34.proboards.com. And right now, we're up to we'll be releasing shortly New Year's Revolution 2007. And I didn't even realize that he was in that turmoil match.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping that Super Crazy would kick him in the face, but he didn't. Thank God they didn't win the turmoil match for the title shot. That's the first time he'd been on pay-per-view in quite a long time. And you know what? I think I would have happily seen Duggan against Adam Bomb in this match. I think I could have dealt with Jim Duggan over Mabel. But in any event, Mabel moves on, and we'll go from there. All right, let's take a break. We're halfway through In Your House number one here on this week's edition of the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast. So let's take a quick breather, and we'll hear from our good friends at WrestleChat.net. Because...
Pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Beck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
WrestleChat.net is your home for all wrestling news, WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. Speaking of Ring of Honor, coming up on Sunday, March 4th, is Ring of Honor's 10th anniversary show, live from the Manhattan Center, otherwise known as Hammerstein Ballroom, in New York City. And my PIC, I must say, a groundswell is beginning for a little group to head into the city. I'm having some discussions last night with our Pablo Picasso, Mr. Jason Greenhouse.
Oh, man.
What are you laughing at? What, are you going to show up?
It's the last thing they want. Piddly dink shows.
And yeah, we might be getting a little group.
Yeah,
I got to talk to
the man Greenhouse wants to attend. That would be pretty cool. Maybe he can paint you Titanic style and then have you autograph with him.
I think Matt Rotello would fit better with that.
No.
With his Celine Dion music playing in the background and his perfectly waxed body.
That would
send
the terror threat revel, level skyrocketing. He was posed nude anywhere near a boat.
Anyway, WrestleChat. I don't think the champ Jeff Peck ever wants to hear one of his bumps mentioned with Matt Rotello. But anyway, great message board on WrestleChat.net. And of course, you see our little mascot, our little Hornswoggle, the PTB gnome. Click on it. You go right to the Podbean page and listen to this show right after you check your news and notes. And of course, they sponsor our news and notes segment every Wednesday on the Place to Be podcast headline show. So WrestleChat.net, your home for everything pro wrestling. And of course, they're trying to start up a little group, little meet and greet for the Ring of Honor show. Obviously, no matches announced yet or nothing. I mean, we're still quite a few weeks away. But
then
go to ROH.
MWF that's been plugging their 10th anniversary show for March in October.
Yes. The big debate, right? Isn't that the big debate between what's his face and poor? I hope Johnny Fab just punches him in the face.
Bushwhacker Luke to sign on. He's going to be there.
Oh, Luke from
the Bushwhackers.
Oh, Luke from the Bushwhackers. I thought you were going to say Luke from Tough Enough.
No, Bushwhacker Luke.
He'd have been better if Luke from Tough Enough was there. But anyway, WrestleChat.net, your home for everything pro wrestling. And again, go to ROHWrestling.com. for more details on their 10th anniversary show, Sunday, March 4th, from the Manhattan Center. We are at the On Center, otherwise known as the Onondaga War Memorial in Syracuse.
I haven't heard that in a while.
The Onondaga War Memorial in Syracuse for In Your House number one. We're halfway through. Our next match is our first title match of the evening. It is for the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team titles, and it pits the champions, freshly minted from WrestleMania, Owen Hart and Big Yokozuna.
Yakazuma,
in a rematch.
Be careful for that Big Yakazuma.
And that Big Yakazuma, with your former champions and the aforementioned, as we saw, as we were talking about in the last match, the Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart. Straight up tag title match. Pretty quick, only 5:44. But you know what?
Well, you could tell they were saving time or trying to make up time for the longer bouts that went on earlier.
Yes. And this is where I was saying, formatically, I think they were starting to be like, oh, maybe the two double-digit matches wasn't the smoothest idea, realizing they still had a main event to do.
And there was a little bit of build-up. Of course, WrestleMania, Yoko came back as a mystery partner. April 23rd, Action Zone, the Blue Brothers were facing the Headshrinkers. Hart and Yoko interfered in the contest to help assert themselves in attacking the Headshrinkers, causing the DQ. The Smoking Guns came down and attacked Hart and Yoko in retaliation. The following night on Raw, it was announced the Guns would be earning this tag title shot in your house, the rematch from WrestleMania. They defeated Barry Horowitz and the Brooklyn Brawler. And then on their last kind of showdown before this match on the May 8th Raw, Bart defeated Owen Hart by pinfall in a singles match. So
okay, they
had a little bit of momentum heading in.
What were your thoughts on Raw at this point in terms of the show itself? They were obviously taping a lot, right? So were they
It definitely felt a little stale. I'll say that. It definitely did feel a little played out. But they would still have pretty good matches. I still watched it religiously, but nothing major, too major ever happened. Mm-hmm. They would get a little shot in the arm in September, obviously, when Nitro debuts. But during this time, it was just kind of status quo going along, doing their thing, formulaic. It almost became like it was in the late 80s with Superstars and Primetime. They were just in the formula, and that's how they went.
Right. Do they have the big letters yet? No, they don't do the big letters for a while, right?
The big Raw letters? No, that wasn't until the reboot at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. So this is actually a pretty good match for just under 6 minutes. Mm. Yokozuna hits the big leg drop on Bart outside the ring and rolls him in, and Owen gets the pin. So your champs remain the champs, Owen Hart and Yokozuna. What a good little team, though, huh?
Yeah.
I don't think they ever thought about it when they put them together, but a really good. Really good tag team.
And it helped them out. It helped both of them out because they probably would have been lost in the shuffle right now. With the way the top of the card is booked and the mid card, these are the two guys that probably just would have been floating around. And they actually helped stabilize the tag division. You would think they'd go in there and kind of be one of those teams that overshadows it. But the way the tag division was right now, they kind of helped stabilize it. They gave this good, solid heel team that could bring on all challengers to feud with. And they had good heat. Owen was the talker, and they had Cornette and Fuji. It was almost like a stable more than a team. So,
yeah, and they just looked really good together. Like, they had that good little guy worker, big. Like, this isn't like Mabel. Like, Yoko is a legit threat, a legit
right, big
guy, you know, big man, monster heel, and Owen was your workhorse. And
it helped Yoko because at this point, he had obviously gotten bigger, and he couldn't really work full matches. He would still have some, but it helped him to be able to kind of hang on the apron while Owen did a lot of the work in the ring, and he would just come in and hit the big spots. So,
right.
Yeah, it worked well. This match isn't as good as Mania because you don't have the big surprise and the big moment of Owen winning the title, but still solid.
Right.
And now the Guns kind of take a step back for a while Owen and Yoko focus on other things. But the Guns will return in the fall as far as being major players.
Right. So your tag team champions remain, and rightfully so and well-deserved, Owen Hart and Yokozuna move on and continue on as tag team champions. All right, our next match, another quickie.
Good evening, Mr. Crispolo.
Ah, there he is.
The man. How are you tonight? Long time no speak.
Yes, it is, ladies and gentlemen. As always,
you Bush League motherfucker.
Our Argentinian holiday helper, fresh off his New Year's diaper wearing bash, the great El Gigante.
My balls have dropped, and 2012 is here.
Woohoo! El Gigante, welcome to 2012. To what do we owe this honor this evening?
I have more great news for you, Mr. Crispolo. There's
a reason
I chose this song. I don't know if you've heard, but the great Eddie Money had hosted a radio show down in Atlanta. The ratings, not so good. It was kind of like Derek LaRue's radio show, failing quickly. So they pulled the plug on Mr. Money's, and there's an opening down in Atlanta, and I didn't know if you want to drop the dead weight and come down with me and start our own show. A morning zoo kind of show.
Oh, you know what, El Gigante? I think that's a great idea. You know, I'd be kind of like the guy that sets things up, and then you would have on the you would help get on the guests, and you know, we can get on all the women, and you can bring on all of your Latin lover girls, and you know, I think it could really set the Southeast on fire. You know, kind of like going in and taking over, like you know, like WCW took over in the Southeast from the old crusty NWA. We could set the radio world on fire. I like that idea.
I should have set an alarm clock so I could wake up when you were done boring me to death. If this is what the show is going to be like, then I want no part of it. I had the two tickets to Paradise lined up for us, but I need to rethink this. No,
no, not at all, not at all. We have to sit down. We're gonna write it out, set it up, and it's going to be great. I swear to you, it's going to be great. But, you know, Giante, you got to, you know, I'll just set up the radio stuff because obviously you don't really, you know, it's not really your cup of tea. But
well, go fuck yourself. How do you know I don't have my own radio show down in Argentina?
Because you would have said something. You would have let us know about it.
I have an anti-Finn propaganda show down there.
Speaking of anti, you know, you do realize that the Finns are the least of your problems because you've got another war of words on your hands.
What now? Who now? Is it Rob Houston again?
No, it's not Rob Houston. He loves you because at least you gave him a song on your... By the way, folks, 300,000 copies sold on iTunes.
Have you received your autographed copy yet?
I have. Mm-hmm. I have. I have it up here on
the
wall.
Let's get the picture of my balls dropping on the back.
It is. Yeah, it is. And you signed right over them. Thank you. I hope that's not actually... Your balls are actually signed. But no, I'm talking about a certain J. Arsenio D'Amato.
Oh my God! When is that prick gonna go away? I'm so tired of him.
Yeah, he's tired of your crap, El Giante. He thinks you're nothing but a blowhard, and you should walk away in a diaper.
Only one man blows hard, and that's Derek LaRue. J. Arsenio D'Amato, you got a beef with me? I challenge you to show up on the 100th episode of the Place to Be podcast, so we can have a showdown, me and you. How about that? A debate, a war of the minds, Mr.
Really?
D'Amato. Yes.
Look at that. Ladies and gentlemen, our first big setup, our big moment, our episode 100 of the Place to Be podcast, the big summit. You know, Rob Houston and I had one, and now another one.
We can settle the war once and for all to show that prepositions at the beginning of name are better than apostrophes.
There you go. Well, El Giante, we're going to set it up right here at the Place to Be podcast, episode 100, the summit between the apostrophe.
I doubt that pussy shows up. That's my prediction. I will win by Sensational Sherry against Sweet Sapphire at SummerSlam 90. I will dress up in my cat outfit, and I will stand in the ring as that polka dot bitch, J. Arsenio D'Amato, hides out in a limousine somewhere.
Oh, my God. Well, folks, you already, right now, we haven't even set the rest of the show up, and you already should be with us for episode 100 of the Place to Be podcast, because finally the talking will end, and the war will begin.
I will oil up my man suit. Get my fur ready, and I will choke you to death, J. Arsenio D'Amato. Go fuck yourself. Goodbye, Mr. Crispolo.
Good night.
Wow. That escalated quickly.
Yeah, it did.
I'd be afraid if I were D'Amato. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to lie either. You do realize, though, I don't know if you noticed, but he called you dead weight.
Him and I got some issues. He's mad. We put the tree away early. He's had to just kind of sleep on the cold floor instead. So we've had some issues, but we're working them out. We're working through them.
You know, if this episode 100 gets as big as it's going to be, you know, we might have to actually bring Mike and the Mad Dog to maybe do commentary for that battle.
We'll see if D'Amato answers the bell.
Been called out.
El Giante threw the punk card down. So
he did. We'll have to wait and see. Very interesting. That's episode 100. We're a few away from that. So, but you know what? We're already
closing in. Yes, we're closing.
We're closing in, and that's something that nobody wants to miss. So, but pretty soon into your future, just like Nitro took over the Southeast, Giante and I might take over the Southeast radio waves. We'll have to wait and see. All right. Before El Giante came in and laid the gauntlet down, we're about to talk about the Hitman's second appearance of the evening at In Your House Number 1, and continuing the feud that started long time ago. This feud is hitting on 2 years now.
Yep.
In a month.
Yeah, and while I haven't been feuding in the ring, it's been going on verbally, as Lawler, of course, always bashes Hart on commentary and rips him and... Of course, backs Owen in their feud and everything else. So
yep, and rips the parents, old and grizzled, and rips Stu, rips Helen. So, and here they have a straight up 1-on-1 match.
Right. So there was a little bit of intrigue too leading up to this. Lawler obviously had been ripping Brett on commentary still, and kept saying like heading into the show that too bad you already have a match. I'm calling you out. Take me on. You know, thinking Brett would never actually accept the challenge because he already had the Hakushi match. But Brett on May 1st said, fuck it, I'll wrestle twice. Let's get it on In Your House, Lawler. And Brett announced that he was dedicating the match to Helen because it was, of course, on Mother's Day.
Yes.
And Lawler said, well, to one-up you, I'm going to have my mom at ringside for this match. So that was the main setup there. Of course, Lawler does come out with the lady he claims to be his mother, who is most likely his current girlfriend, I'm guessing, because she was a buxom young 20-something.
Yeah.
Who comes out. And, of course, Brett, now worried about his ankle, heading into this match. But backstage, Brett does a little promo by himself, talking to Vince, and he hops up and down on his ankle, showing that he had been sandbagging it. And Lawler was unaware, of course, because he was already in the ring. So
it was very interesting. And you know, you made a good point in our on our written review. Like, now we talk about what CM Punk does now. It's the little things that matter. And who else would come up with the idea of, you know, playing possum? No one did it better back then. He used to do it in the matches. He was a master of snowing you over. He was – Brett was definitely no dummy. And we talk about on our Wednesday shows about CM Punk similarly doing that now. But Brett was just a master of just sticking it to you at the last minute. And he painted Lawler into a corner – and came out, you know, doing his little hoppity hop, and they have their match.
And I was always a fan of show long angles like this. You know, nothing major, just a little something to make the show feel like you gain something for watching it. It was a cool little story for those in the know on the show watching it, had ordered it, seeing something unfold and develop. And that was neat. I like when they do that on Raw, where they just kind of have a little show long arc as well. So it's always something a little special.
Exactly. Again, the match, not very long, just barely over 5 minutes.
You can tell they were rushing at this point, obviously.
Yeah. I mean,
the first two matches had run long, and they still had a lot to go. So you could tell that these last three matches have all been rush jobs.
Yeah, exactly. Like I mentioned earlier, kind of reminds me of how they what they did this year with WrestleMania 27, which was they had no clue how to format it, to give it formatics, and now they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off. It ends with, obviously, the feud doesn't officially end as Hakushi comes back in and interferes, and they double-team him, and the match ends with a DQ. And it's actually a pin, right?
Yeah,
no,
he
comes
him.
In and pins
him.
That's
him
right.
Yep.
Pin him.
Hakushi, I don't know if I forget if Hakushi hits him or what he does, but he definitely interferes and Lawler pins him. But I remember being shocked because this card totally befuddled me, I guess, with my picks. So I remember at the time saying, oh, Hakushi will beat Brett early. No doubt about that. Keep Hakushi strong, and then Brett will get a seat back by pinning Lawler. I definitely did not think Brett would pin Hakushi and then lose to Lawler. That was definitely a shock to me. So this feud obviously continues to the next month, but a pretty big upset here for Lawler to step back in and get the win.
Right. Now, according to the Broham Grahamcothon, it says he pinned him with a double leg roll-up when Hakushi interfered and hit three diving headbutts.
Okay.
As referee Earl Hebner was tied upside down in the ropes after becoming distracted
by
Santo!
Santo and Kanto taking on Tanaka.
Yes, so there you go. So the feud continues, and Brett gets you think that he finally gets the upper hand, and Lawler Lawler pulls one out of his
I think I was more shocked because now I was like, wow, this feud's actually going to continue. I thought it may just be like a little one-month throwaway thing. I didn't expect them to completely resurrect this feud.
I know. Yeah, no kidding. So there you go. So Lawler gets the upper hand. Brett wrestles twice. Not the last time he'll do that this year. And although this time he does not get the same result as he did earlier in the night. And Lawler escapes again to continue the feud. Not a bad match. I actually liked it a little bit more than you did. I gave it a 2.5. You gave it a 2. Not bad. Nothing great, but not bad. It's on a few things. Let me check the Broham. It's on In Your House, The Greatest Matches. I didn't realize it was a tape. Sounds like something you would have bought. You never saw that in the videos? That sounds like a tape you would rent. Or Josh, or one of the
boys. I don't think I was renting as much. I think the local place was trying to close up around this time. Honestly, they weren't carrying as much wrestling tapes. And I had so much stuff on tape of my own at this point, either ordering or taping Raws and stuff. So,
right.
I don't think I was really renting too many Coliseum videos at this point.
Okay. Let's see. The Legends of Wrestling Collection, which is, of course, the roundtable shows that you see on 24/7, that collection, what was it, a couple years ago, some of those sets came out, and the Lawler Junkyard Dog combo has this match on it. So.
Of all the Jerry Lawler matches they chose, this. Oh, I guess they don't have a lot of Memphis footage, I guess. So that was probably
unless he gives it, but
well, I don't think he has a lot of it. I think it's locked up. Who's that guy, Macklin or whatever? Or
right, forgot about that.
I almost said Jeremy Macklin, but I can't think of his Todd. No, I can't think of his name right now. But there's a guy that has a lot of the footage that isn't giving it up. So
yeah, I'll have to look that up. Okay, so Lawler and the Hitman continue their feud with Lawler stealing this one thanks to help from Hakushi. Okay, before we get to the main event, obviously the show was called In Your House, and there was a reason for that. Why don't you explain to everyone what the real linchpin of this show was?
The WWF was giving away a house in Orlando, Florida. They wanted to give away a house as part of a promotion to watch this show. I'm guessing they bought it cheap when they were developing some land or some crap. So I remember entering. I definitely did, and I had the phone by me in case Todd and his co-host, Stephanie Wyan, who was co-hosting Mania with him, she was like brought in to be another energetic kind of morning zoo co-host. So, mm-hmm. and they go ahead and they draw the name, and I think they try and call like twice or whatever, and they have issues as you would expect. And then finally, the winner, Matt Pompasilli from Henderson, Nevada, picks up. And Todd, in his great radio voice, "You won the house!" And Matt freaks out. And he was the winner of the big contest that they would never do again. But that was a cool little hook for them to kind of draw viewers in. I don't know. It was giving away a house, pretty unique.
Yes. You're telling me nobody – maybe – I don't know if they were – do we have to think, were they really planning on doing it every month, or you think this was
no.
just –
Yeah, I think it was just a one-time thing.
Obviously somebody in Vince's legal or business department is going to go, Vince, you do realize you can't afford to give away, well, you figure, four big shows. If
there had
to
be some deal, though, where yeah. they had the house. I don't know. I can't imagine they just bought a house. They must have gotten some deal on it.
Yeah, great. It'll come back that it was a Ponzi scheme or something. So he would have gone to jail for that instead. But you got to think to yourself, what was he going to give away, eight houses a year?
Actually, I lied. These pay-per-views were only $14.95 at the beginning.
Wow.
Yeah, $15. So that's why I probably was able to order them all. It's only $15.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm sure your dad must love that. So Stephanie Wyand and our guy there, Todd, gives it away. And didn't we read somewhere that Matt Pompasilli like sold the house because he wanted the money because he
no,
couldn't,
what happened
couldn't
was
taxes or something?
Yeah, on May 22nd Raw, they officially showed the Pompasillis moving into the house. And there was actually a story in WWE. Well, the story leaked later, I think, just on the internet, that they sold the house because the taxes were like insane in that area of Orlando, and they couldn't afford it. But WWE Magazine in like the 2000s, late 2000s, actually caught up with Pompasilli and had a little interview with him. They were able to track him down, and they kind of just talked about it and everything. So, I don't think the Pompasillis remained in the house for that long.
Nah, I mean, Orlando was probably in a very nice gated community.
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure the fees and the taxes were probably ridiculous. So, all right, speaking of ridiculous, we get to our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. Big Daddy Cool. And Diesel was 2-for-2 in pay-per-view title matches this year. Of course, he wrestled the Hitman at the Rumble, Royal Rumble, and it was a great match. It was a kind of a clusterfuck ending, but it was a great match, and the match ended in no contest. And then, of course, the dudes with the future. Well, I won't steal the nickname because I'll let you announce it when they do it. But the Click members, Diesel and Shawn Michaels, would have an awesome, unbelievably awesome match at WrestleMania 11 in Hartford, won by Big Daddy Cool. But before we get to the match itself, and who Diesel's opponent is, something big happened the next night on Raw after Shawn lost his title match to Sid. Why don't you elaborate on that with the listeners?
I got here because of the Heartbreak Kid. Quite honestly, I don't need a bodyguard. And I certainly don't need a bodyguard to cause the referee to turn his ankle and cost me the World Wrestling Federation Championship. So, as far as the rematch is concerned, Big Sid, I'm going to do you a favor, big man. In this rematch, I'm giving you the night off.
Let me tell you something, you stupid little puke.
Uh-oh.
As we stand here, get the feeling you wouldn't believe these things that you're saying.
Wait a minute, we're gonna have to take a break.
I know.
Let's just cool off a moment,
no,
please.
No, you wouldn't believe these things. And I'm gonna tell you something, boy. You don't give me the night off. You don't give me nothing but respect. I'm beat up. I'm tired and I'm sore.
Okay.
And I don't need your crap.
Okay.
As far as this...
Iconic promo there.
Yes.
And it was clear at this point, coming off the Rumble, coming off WrestleMania, they could no longer hold on it with Shawn as a heel. It was clear that the fans just wanted to cheer this guy, so they had to turn him face. So, you just heard right there, Sid turned on Shawn Michaels, told him he had the night off. Sid didn't like that, told him to stick it, hit him with a clothesline, three power bombs, three sloppy power bombs, because one of them actually hurt Shawn, and he would be on the sidelines for about 6 weeks after this. They were still planning at this point to do the Diesel Shawn rematch at In Your House. I think they were really hoping to sell this first major new pay-per-view that they had based on that rematch. But with the injury to Shawn, they had to kind of change things. So Diesel was then scheduled to defend his title against Bam Bam Bigelow, the member of the Million Dollar Corporation, after they had a confrontation on April 16th, 95, Action Zone. On the same day on Challenge, in a segment with the corporation, Bigelow was noticed to be snubbed, signaling a turn. It was announced over the weekend of April 16th that Sid and Diesel now would face each other In Your House. And Sid could potentially be facing Diesel for the championship, depending on whether he retained or lost his title when he faced Bigelow. April 24th, Raw, Sid came out, said he was unhappy about the stipulation because if Bigelow won, Sid wouldn't get his title shot. Diesel retained because the corporation turned on Bigelow, with Tatanka tripping him as he hit the ropes. Diesel hit a powerbomb and pinned him. DiBiase, the corporation, insulted and attacked Bigelow. Diesel came back out and saved him. So the Bigelow face turn that started pretty much right after Mania, and it was now complete, and he was now aligned with Diesel and eventually Shawn Michaels as well. Sid had a match with Razor Ramon on May 1st. Diesel approached the ring ready to fight Sid, who, along with the corporation's manager, Ted DiBiase, left the arena abruptly. The following week, DiBiase revealed that he and Sid had now been working together for a while and admitting it was him who told Shawn Michaels to go to Bodyguard. So a nice little retcon there to turn... add the extra heat, put Sid and DiBiase together, make Sid one of the primary members of the corporation.
Yes.
And I like that, how they went back and said DiBiase had advised Shawn to get a bodyguard. He brought in Sid, and they were in cahoots the whole time. So kind of a neat little twist there.
Yes. And I was actually very excited because, being the big Sid mark that I was, it was good to see him back. Of course, let's kind of elaborate on what went on while he was gone. Sid, of course, left after WrestleMania 8 over a few things. Some say injury, some say...
Did we talk about all this at WrestleMania?
Do we talk about the scissors and stuff?
I don't know. I don't think we need to get into all that, do we?
Okay. Anyway, he went to WCW and then got into the infamous scissors attack with Arn Anderson. He was supposed to face Vader at Starrcade 93, ended up being Ric Flair, blah, blah, blah. So... he's back, and I was excited because I love Sid.
Well, you know what was really cool, too, was on April 29th, he destroyed Aldo Montoya in a squash, and it was very reminiscent of that 92 Reign of Terror.
Oh, it was awesome. That he did. Absolutely.
And yep, it was bringing back some memories. And one of my favorite moments on Raw on May 1st, during that before that altercation with Diesel, when he was set to fight Razor, Razor was doing his little pose in front of the pyro, you know, the gold lights that shoot up.
Yes.
And Sid charged through the pyro and hit Razor from behind. It was a really cool scene to see Sid come charging through and crush Razor from behind. And I liked this Sid turn, and I thought he had a lot of heat behind him.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it just does not carry over to this match.
No. And here's why. And I said this, I even said this in my comments on our review. Sid goes by the beat of his own drummer. He's done that his whole career to this point. Whether he's a heel or a babyface, the big guy is his own guy. He had managers and you know, he was in heel factions and that kind of thing. But Sid never backed down from anybody. Sid never, never did the whole kind of run out of the ring and not want to get hit kind of thing. And he never did what normal heels do against big babyfaces. Should never talk either. But in this instance,
Actually, too, we should clarify that on the... I'm sorry to interrupt you, but...
No,
that's
okay.
Free-for-all of this pay-per-view was the infamous, other infamous Sid moment.
The offense, but there are a lot of skeptics that think that perhaps you can't take it. How do you address those skeptics?
Well, the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, Hal.
Sorry. Anybody has any doubt?
Yes.
Alive, you big idiot.
Immediately from this point, you can tell that Sid's like, he seems like he's not all there. I don't know. This match, and as everyone knows, you and I, as wrestling fans, know this match is right in our wheelhouse. Two, you know, big brawling dudes, you know, big power moves right up our alley. But for some reason, the problem here is you're dealing with two guys who aren't really known for having to dictate pace and tempo. You know, obviously, at the Rumble, you had Brett. Need we say more? At WrestleMania, you had Shawn, who was the heel. Again, need we say more? Here, you're in a situation where it's not a problem that Diesel's facing another big dude. Because you've made a you mentioned this a lot in our last two vaults, that it was weird to see Diesel have to kind of be the face in peril when he's bigger than all his opponents.
Right.
In this instance, he's got a guy that's equally his size. And I almost think Sid's bigger. He might be a couple inches taller, actually.
They're close.
It's close. My point is, finally, from a psychology viewpoint, you have a perfectly made thing for Diesel. Now he's going to face a guy equal to him, and it actually works out. Plus, he's in a heel faction, which DiBiase's trying to really get off the ground, really. But it's 11 and a half minutes, and it's just so dreadfully dull.
Like you said, Sid wasn't one to play the chicken shit.
Nope.
And even leading up to this match, he wasn't playing that role yet.
Nope.
This match is where it starts. And this really tells the story of the rest of Sid's 95. Because instead of being the ass-kicking heel or face that everyone loves to see Sid as, he's this, bitch guy, and he's working rest holds. And this did not suit them, this match, at all. And 11 minutes, this probably should have been a lot shorter if you're going to have to short matches. I know it's the main event, but... this is not a good sign for Diesel stuttering. And this is where I'm saying they had so many talented guys under the undercard. And I get that Sid had some good heat, and he come off that hot thing with Shawn Michaels, but there's other guys that could have used, and especially over the next 2 months where it's even worse. You know, if they took the mulligan here and said, all right, this didn't work out, let's just kind of maybe have Diesel pin Sid on Raw or something to move on. But instead, they kind of stick with it over the next couple of months, and that's what makes this even worse. If they just, you know, cut their losses and ended the feud here, I think everyone would have been okay in the long run. But not a great way to cap off this initial pay-per-view outing for In Your House.
No, and I don't know why Vince did that. I mean, this is where, and this obviously...
Well, it seems like he was backed in the corner, though, because it seems like, I mean, I don't know how legit the story is, but I'm pretty sure it's true that they were going to have the Shawn rematch here. And they turn a face still, and they were going to do face versus face and may have, like, Sid get involved or whatever. And I think they wanted that match to headline the show to make it a big deal. And I remember reading the Herb Kuhn stuff, and I'm pretty sure it's in there, too, for 95. Mm-hmm. But he did get hurt in that bump, so.
Yeah. And I understand the match, but why did he have to – this is where Vince still had that kind of stubbornness of the old way of doing things – where he wanted Sid to be like the monster guys of the late 80s. And he hadn't quite figured out that, you know what, even by 95, in the pre-years of Nitro and the wars and all that kind of stuff, and maybe the crowd was changing a little bit. And people knew Sid as a monster.
But the issue is they couldn't really book him that way because you can't have him be – if they booked him as a monster and a crazed guy that the crowd was going to be really behind, he was going to out-pop Diesel, and they couldn't have that at that point.
Right. Yeah, and that's – so really, if this was temporary till Shawn got better, then I guess the match – you could take the match as a powder. All right, we slapped them together to eat up time, and it was a big dog. You almost wonder if they were thinking backstage, wow, this match sucked. And if someone said, well, you know – it was a one-shot thing, and, you know, Diesel kind of, you know, they got as much out of it as we thought, and we'll move on to something else. Or if they really did think that this was working and that they were going to move on with it and continue with the feud. I mean, it's – I don't know. I almost think that they really had no choice in your philosophy of needing a bigger guy to kind of counter Diesel instead of him continuously trying to face smaller heels and looking like the guy in peril. But thinking now about the whole Shawn not being able to wrestle, that they did kind of get painted into a corner and this is the best they could do. And that's fine. But still, the match...
It's too bad they couldn't have made it like a wild brawl.
Yeah. There's no excuse. If it's going to end in a DQ, you might as well just have the two guys start throwing shit at each other.
Yeah. Instead they have the tepid and played out heel Tatanka come out, who gets this rejuvenated push at this point for some reason, even though his feud with Luger was done and he was just kind of blah.
Yeah.
He comes out and helps Sid, and then Bigelow comes out, and this kind of establishes him as the next big face as well. So that part I'm okay with, the Bigelow stuff. But Tatanka being involved in this whole feud is just a mess. So
yeah,
things do not end well. And the show started with a lot of promise. We talked about it early. The two opening matches were very good. They got a lot of time to tell stories and featured four guys that were really good wrestlers.
Yeah.
And from there, the matches kind of got hosed based on time. And then by the main event, things were just dead in the water. So it's too bad, because I think the show could have been better than it ends up being. And I know it gets torched a lot as we get to the comments from and feedback from our nation in a minute. But I think it could have been okay. I think the concept and the idea was fine, and the booking was fine. But I thought the build-up was all pretty good for the show, actually, too.
Yeah.
But by the time the show aired, it was clear that this middle part of 95 was not going to go well.
No, it wasn't. And... Even if anybody thought that this main event was just a short-term thing to kind of fill this, if this was going to be your first secondary show and you wanted it to make a good first impression, this main event was probably not the one you pick. But then again, what other guy do you have face Diesel, you know? So
They could have held the Bigelow turn off and had that match here.
I bet you would have been better.
Oh, it definitely would have been better. Bigelow definitely would have worked a better match.
Yeah, exactly. And have Sid on the outside. Mm. Yeah, I agree. So there you have, and then of course there's the two Coliseum video exclusives I mentioned earlier. Taker beats Kama, and Bigelow beats Tatanka. We both gave it a C-. That's about what it is. It's slightly below average. It's not a complete utter piece of crap, but
right. Without those first two matches, it would have been a complete dud. But
yeah,
thanks to the strength of those two matches, it survives a little bit.
Yeah, it does. And again, that main event is nowhere to be found on a compilation, and why would it be? You're not going to see many compilation matches from this year anyway. There'll be a few, but...
All right, you ready to get into this feedback?
Yeah, you can find the show on tape, on Coliseum videotape and somewhere. All right, yeah, I got it here. How about I dive in first?
All right, have fun.
All right, thank you. Take a sip of my beverage. All right, here we go. Corey Ferreira. The birth of In Your House and the B-grade WWF pay-per-view. First off, Bret Hart versus Hakushi. These guys worked some awesome matches in 1995 while Bret was in the mid-card, and this is a good way to start off the show. Good opener, shows how Bret can make guys look great in the ring. Razor versus Double J and the Roadie. Not the best match they have, but not awful, as some of the In Your House matches of 1995 would be. Next, Adam Bomb versus Mabel. Well, this is a dud, and the Mabel push continues sadly. Owen and Yoko defend the tag titles against the Smoking Guns in an average match. Then again, Owen does most of the work, so it's going to be above average. Lawler versus Bret. I honestly have no memory of this match being on the show. Now the famous match of the show, the awfulness that is Sid versus Diesel with the classic Sid botch promo. Could the Diesel title run get any worse? Because this match is a piece of trash. Not good at all, and they didn't even give Nash a clean win either. Why in the world was Taker and Bam Bam, who just headlined WrestleMania, left off the pay-per-view portion of the show? The early In Your House events seemed to do this quite a lot. Owen vs. Bulldog was left off the show as well. Mabel vs. Adam Bomb got on the pay-per-view, but Owen vs. Bulldog didn't. What the hell was McMahon thinking? This is a funny line right here. Amazingly, the show drew 332,000 buys, more than shows do today. Yes, this show outdrew the best pay-per-view of 2011, which was Money in the Bank. This shit outdrew an awesome show. How, I have no idea. Well, I think I've ranted on this show long enough. 1995 just got worse.
Neil Trauma. I remember sending in my postcards for the house contest. I was so pissed after I lost and found out they weren't going to be giving away a house at every In Your House pay-per-view. The show itself was pleasantly surprising, considering these were the matches deemed not worthy of being a King of the Ring show the next month, a show I was live at, by the way, so expect some detailed commentary next week, and we look forward to that, Neil.
Holy cow. That's for sure. Matt Souza. Brett vs. Hakushi was really good, everything else not so much. The only other memory I have of this show is Lawler's mother being played by a 20-something-year-old model. On a side note, I hope that the WWE will eventually release either a Best of In Your House set or an In Your House anthology like what they did with WrestleMania and the Royal Rumble. I concur with that. I've said that a lot. There were a lot of hidden gems that took place at In Your House, and I think if they ever released a set, it would be a bestseller. I concur.
J. Arsenio D'Amato. On these mediocre pay-per-views, the excellence of execution stands out more than ever, just like Skinner at this Tuesday in Texas. The Hitman made Hakushi look like a star for one night, and the feud with Lawler never got tiring, although it went on forever.
One of our newest and more exciting members of PTB Nation, Saverio DeFazio. It's good to have all these Italians here. I remember I was in grade 3. It was Mother's Day. And I'm not laughing, Saverio, at the fact you were in third grade, but I was a senior in college.
Yeah, right, senior in college. You wish.
It was Mother's.
You're a senior citizen.
See, hey, you know what? It's not my fault that Stanislaus Zbyszko spoke at my commencement. It was Mother's Day, and we had a choice between going. Oh, by the way, I did think of you the other night because I was reading something, and it mentioned Toots Mott. I wish he was at my commencement.
You were the same person.
Yeah, we had a choice between going to the drive-in or ordering In Your House. Well, my choice was In Your House. Okay, Saverio. Looking back, the show wasn't too bad. I liked Brett versus Hakushi. The handicap match was okay, but they could have had Razor versus Jeff Jarrett Part 3 or have a debuting Savio Vega be like a mystery partner for Razor against Rhodey and Jarrett. All in all, my dad loved the main event. The Sid Diesel match
maybe the only one.
Yeah, really. The Sid Diesel match was his favorite. Mine, too.
Wow. Okay.
All right, good. Good. I'm glad we had some differing opinions. That's good. The finish was horrible. Have Tatanka interfere. All in all, it was okay. At least my mom had a great Mother's Day. Well, that's good. I hope all our moms did.
Hey, Luca's back. Karen Polland.
The Hot Scott.
The monthly pay-per-views begin, which makes me wonder what year Scott and Justin are going to be on by the end of 2012. With his baby coming, we'll probably be at the end of 95. But
I know.
Brett and Hakushi have a tremendous match. It really shows that Brett was being wasted in the mid-card throughout 95. But at least we got some good matches out of it. At one point, there's a scary bit where Hakushi does a springboard moonsault to the outside, and Brett lands on his knees, but lands awkwardly on his back at the same time. Looked nasty. Razor gets a measure of revenge against Jarrett and the Roadie, and we see the debut of a man who got a somewhat of a decent push. The Mabel experiment begins, as he has an okay match with Adam Bomb, who's criminally underrated. The tag title match is good, but it's difficult whether to say WrestleMania 11 is better than the match at this show. Brett Lawler was decent and continued to feud nicely. Brett Sid is crap and begins a long run of shitty main events that Diesel will participate in. As a side note, I have the UK Tagged Classics version. It actually has Tatanka Bam Bam and Taker Kamba after the show. Tatanka Bam Bam is fine, but Taker Kamba sucks ass. Overall, not a bad show, which is something that cannot be said for some of the shows in 95.
Just want to confirm, you actually said Brett Sid instead of Diesel Sid.
Did I?
If it was Brett Sid, I would have taken that main event.
subconsciously, I guess.
Yeah, wishful thinking. Rob King. As most have already said, Hart Hakushi was the best match on the card. And even as a 10-year-old, the second Bret Hart pretended to hurt his knee, I was screaming at the TV, he's faking it so he can trick Lawler. I remember Doc Hendricks annoying the hell out of me on this pay-per-view, although he always annoyed me. Savio Vega makes an inauspicious debut, not even getting mentioned by name. I will forever be an Adam Bomb hater after this. If he had just beaten Mabel, we might have been saved from that horrendous 3 hours called King of the Ring 1995. The highlight of the evening comes in retrospect. After the Hart-Lawler match, McMahon on commentary says, I have never seen Bret Hart this angry before. Just wait another 30 months, Vince.
All right, I'll grab the next two. Matty Mars. Only thing I remember is sending in my postcard to win the house. I was so sure I was going to win. Jared Insel. After WCW began churning out monthly pay-per-views a couple years later, WWF finally caved and did the same. Did the same in May of 95. Many of the business had concerns that promoting monthly pay-per-views would saturate the market, and to some degree it did. Yet here we are, 16 years later, and WWE is still doing it. I'm a bit torn on the idea of monthly pay-per-views. On one hand, I think it's a little bit much to be promoting a new pay-per-view in a TV show every 30 days or so. On the other hand, there's a part of me that wishes WWF had done this back in the late 80s and early 90s when they had the roster that could have done it, supported this concept. I know the business wasn't ready for it at that point, and I know they still had Saturday's main event then, but that's different. Given how lousy the product was in 95, it seems strange that WWF started promoting monthly pay-per-views at this point, but given the way WCW was dictating things, I don't think Vince had much of a choice. And I think that's proven by the fact that he made them shorter shows. if there is one thing that's good about the in-house pay-per-view is the gems you can come across in terms of matches on the show. So the first in-house event, Brett versus Akushi, is one of those gems. It's a great bout that has aged very well. Makes you wonder how WWF couldn't do much with Akushi when they're starved for new talent. The rest of the card is fairly forgettable, but nothing is really offensive. Unlike a certain pay-per-view that comes in 1 month later. Oh boy. Here we go.
Oh, I love how you did that. Oh, I'll just take these next two so I can do the okay. Brian Samick, who, by the way, his Nittany Lions have a new head coach, and we'll talk more about that next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me have my drink again. All right. And Brian Samick, in your house number one, the first new pay per view as the WWF strikes out into the monthly pay per view world. The dark matches on this show, most of them, were way better than the pay per view matches. Where's that house now? Who lives in it today? Well, it's not, what's his name? It's not the kid that won, that's for sure.
Matt Pompaselli.
Yes, he does not live.
It's hard to get him on the show tonight.
Could you imagine? Probably get a kick out of it. Again, I have a strange enjoyment of the matches from 1995. The angles were fucking awful, but a good number of matches were really good, just as matches. Well, we mentioned that earlier. That's very true. To start, didn't Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the greatest of all time, debut at this point? An interview with him here wouldn't have hurt to establish his character, or was it next month? We'll pass on that for now. Brett and Hakushi ranks up there with some of the best pay-per-view openers in history. Hakushi's plancha outside to Brett was breathtaking in 1995, especially since I hadn't seen much ECW at that point. Razor winning the handicap match had the wrong ending. Two men, one of which is your IC champ, the other is not a jobber, should win over any single. But that is an issue I have with most non-jobber handicap matches. This pretty much finished up their feud, so getting a cheap win for the IC champ would have been better. The Candy Girl Super Summer 1995 push begins with a squash of Adam Bomb. With where they were going with Mabel, it made sense here. The idea itself, though, was awful. Who sat in that office and said, hey, I got it. Let's push purple baggy suit wearing Mabel all summer, leading to a SummerSlam 1995 main event with Diesel. And even worse, what was Vince doing when he said okay? The main event is not as bad as many make it out to be. It's a decent big man versus big man match that isn't meant to be the end of something, but merely the beginning of a summer feud. Diesel's landing on his elbow is nasty, though, after the Sid powerbomb. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next month because that plays a big role in that match.
Yeah. The Coliseum video has an Undertaker versus Kama singles match on it. This should have been on the pay-per-view instead of the tag match if they were just going to squash the guns in 5 minutes. Put that on a Raw or the dark match and this match on the pay-per-view. They would do the same thing in July as well with Taker and Kama. Bigelow versus Tatanka dark matches on that videotape as well.
So I just did a quick Facebook search. I think I found Matt Pompaselli. There's no picture or anything, but he went to Silverado High School, which I looked, and is in Nevada, and works at a casino. So it's got to be him.
Good for him.
Station Casino. He doesn't have much on
Palace Station?
Huh?
Palace Station Casino?
It just says Station Casino.
Okay, because Palace Station, I stayed there a long time ago when I was in Vegas. That's funny.
So you didn't stay at the Tropicana with the Rat Pack?
Ugh, I wish. That would have been great.
He has nothing else on his Facebook page. It's pretty bare bones, so I don't know if he'd ever check it. As I say, may I write him, see if he wants to come on. But all right. Sean Shrimp Watts. Fairly decent show. Love the way Brett made Lawler think he was hurt. Nice to the good guy con to see the good guy con the con artist in a similar way to what he did to Brett at SummerSlam 93. Bulldog versus Owen dark match was the best of the night. The main event was dire. My thought after seeing this event was things could only get better at King of the Ring. Just a shame they only got worse.
Dave Hall. WWF introduced a new type of pay-per-view. With only 2 hours and less hype, you knew that the events were not going to set the world on fire, but were avenues to continue storylines. It's just a shame that Diesel is in the main event with Sid. I think utilizing HBK in the main event would have been a better thought, maybe a tag match with Diesel. As stated before, Brett and Hakushi put on a great little match, and then Brett pulls double duty as he rekindles his unresolved rivalry with Jerry Lawler. I never had a problem with them in another program, as they never really finished the first one. Razor gets revenge on Jarrett and the Roadie, and the post-match beatdown allows Savio Vega to, quote, debut. Owen and Yoko versus the Guns is solid. Overall, the card was good without being great, mainly thanks to the efforts of Bret Hart and Razor Ramon.
The Jay Hinchy that stole Christmas. The beginning of the monthly pay-per-views after WCW began going on pay-per-view on a monthly basis. I've never seen this in your house from start to finish, but I've seen both of Bret's matches with Hakushi and the King. I also remember the main event being Diesel Sid for the WWF title and it leading to In Your House 2 in July. Savio making his debut, saving Razor from Jarrett and Roadie was cool. The In Your House pay-per-views were solid overall, some better than others, but the first one is pretty memorable in my opinion.
Okay. And next, Austin Faff yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Nice new concept with the pay-per-views being cheaper than the Big Four. It should be the case nowadays, so more people care about them. Great match with Brett Hakushi, but the match with Brett Lawler was just not as good, but at least it was quick with Lawler getting an upset win. I doubt that was Lawler's mother with him, more like one of his many wives or El Gigante's wives.
Attaboy.
He's married, you bastard. Handicap match was good, however. A match between Razor Jarrett again would have been better. Since when do fans get to come in and just walk to the back without getting arrested? Oh, wait, it's just Quang. Candy Girl begins his road to the throne. Tag title match is quick and straight to the point. Diesel Sid was just there with a bad ending. Overall, not a bad way to spend 2 hours. The house that was given away was actually El Gigante's. Even El Gigante fell on hard times. He has since bounced back, though. Didn't need that piece of shit house.
Fuck it. Pump it silly. Jason Greenhouse, Mr. Picasso himself. Brett and Hakushi stole the show. I wish the WWE, WWF, fuck you, Jason Greenhouse, had done more with Hakushi. This match might have been the highlight of his WWF career. Brett and the King would have better pay-per-view matches than the one they had on this night. Razor vs. Double J in the roadie was okay. Savio Vega's debut was cool. Mabel Atombomb match could have taken place at Raw Superstars or Challenge. Tag team title, basically anywhere else but the show, he's saying. The tag title match was decent. To me, it didn't matter because Owen and Yoko were awesome as a tag team and couldn't do any wrong. Diesel and Sid was a bore of a main event. I liked Michael Doc Hendricks Hayes doing commentary with Vince. Not a bad debut for the pay-per-view, as WWF was still trying to recover from the down period. I refuse to say WWE before 2002.
I concur with you on that. I agree. All in, I like how Jason puts the Mabel Adam Bomb match could have taken place on, and then lists he forgot Mania,
House Show, yeah, Action Zone.
Okay, another new member to PTB Nation. Former Doobie Brothers.
I was going to say, should I be playing some Doobie Brothers music?
You should play a little What a Fool Believes. Michael McDonald. Welcome, by the way. Welcome to the Place to Be Pocket. But you know, Michael, we had to do that. We knew we had to do it. You just don't have your white beard. But anyway. An odd show to really review, as it was a prototype for the extra pay-per-views and almost a glorified jobber-free TV show. Brett and Hakushi easily had the match of the night and maybe the highlight of the White Angels run in the promotion. Clearly wasted talent, and it probably didn't help having Santo, the male geisha, stuck with him. Male geisha. Handicap match was okay, but really shows how much the Ramon Jarrett feud died right after Mania. I know this was meant to be a tag match, but if they were going to have Aldo Montoya do their first run-in, they may as well have had him into the match to try and give a bit of a pay-per-view rub from the bad guy. More notable for the debut of Vega. Mabel. Ugh, I don't hate him. I think he was 23 at this point, and especially with his size, he was not ready for the role he was about to get. Adam Bomb could have been something special.
Look at the crowd.
This poor bastard, Michael McDonald, on our Facebook page probably gets this like his whole life. No, we're gonna do it to him as well.
But you know what? He's new to the nation, and he's the only one that has an intro theme. These other guys wish they did, don't they?
Yeah, Michael, please take this all in good fun.
Yes, of course. And again, welcome to the family. You made me lose my place.
Tag title match.
Tag title match was too short to mean anything, as was the stupid Lawler Brett match. The time they were in hurt the feud that was white hot in 1993. Diesel versus Sid. What can I say other than Sid must have been held down and forced to watch Vince shit in his softball glove to make him so uninterested and borderline detached. Horrible main event, and it only gets worse. Again, it's hard to grade as it's a prototype, but there were glaring holes that they should have worked on right away, not nearly an entire year before acting. All right, good. Oh, and I'll just add this one at the end. Okay. Michael McDonald again. Oh, before I forget, why was Bam Bam and Tatanka a damn bonus match? It was a hot feud. Bam Bam's face turn had actually worked, and the fans embraced him. It could have solidified him and given Buffalo a boost. This is...
Buffalo.
This is early click workings with Adam Bomb. My next two chances will be more nasty. Okay.
And finally, Mr. Triple Herman himself, Mike Wilkinson. This was such a bad show. With Shawn and Taker off the pay-per-view, they really didn't have a lot going on with the crappy roster they had. 95 is just a bad year in pro wrestling. WCW was horrible at this time, as Hogan was just boring, and they pushed Sting down the card, and WWF was equally bad. I see why ECW gained so much popularity. Brett Hakushi is the only good match. I loved Owen Yoka during this time. They looked strong during the title defense. Sid did not fit the chicken heel role, so this whole thing is just ridiculous. I think Diesel catches a bad rap sometimes, but they didn't book him good angles either, and I think it goes both ways on his reign of boredom. With Shawn now as a babyface, he had nothing to work with as far as heels. WWF is making an attempt to compete with WCW, who upped the pay-per-views, but this one is in the toilet, in the sewer, and in the sink!
Hey, what was he doing? I'm surprised he's not on this show.
Everyone
waving
else
the New Zealand flag around.
All right, so there is In Your House 1.
I need
another review in the bag. And, of course, from here we have a lot more 1995 fun to come. A couple shout-outs I wanted to give before we head out. Head over to the Place to Be message board, Bigelow34ProBoards.com, not only for our reviews, but also for our good friend Coldstone. Has been running through Royal Rumbles, and last month he was doing all the December pay-per-views. He does good work, very informative, and I've been trying to post some more on our Facebook page as well. But help him out, check him out, get him some views. He's a good guy. I also want to give a shout to Matt Davis. It's his birthday now, since it's past midnight on the 7th?
Today is the 7th.
It's now the 7th, yes. So happy birthday to him.
Yes, Matt.
And also Angelo, I'm going to fuck this up. Guina Gundo wanted a shout out to him and his friends Mark, Josh, and Zion. So there's your shout out, PTB Nation. Friends of the Nation, Angelo and his buddy. So there's your shout out there. So I think that's all the business we have. We will be back Wednesday night, as always, with our headlines, cornucopia of fun show. Be back next weekend as well with King of the Ring 95. And from there, I guess we'll be moving closer to that 100th episode. So get to me if you want to appear. We will be sending out, probably this week, I'll be sending out messages to everyone that we want to definitely hope to have on the show. Remember, you need Skype and a microphone and some time. I think did we pinpoint the date yet?
Yeah, didn't we say it was going to be the 25th?
Yeah, it's like the last Wednesday or Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that in January. We'll get
Wednesday
the official
the 25th.
Date out to you. If you get some free time that night around 9:30 or later Eastern time and you want to appear, you can come on, shoot the shit with us for 5 or 10 minutes, and be on your way. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Vintage Vault. We'll talk to you later this week. For my PIC, Scotty C, I am Justin Rosero. Thank you for listening.
Peace. If you want me, why can't you get closer? Never there. You're never there. You're never, ever, ever.